This is Eric Ellefson. Welcome to my conversations with friends, colleagues, innovators, people that I find really interesting in education, people that I randomly meet or just reach out to or hear speak, or just people who've become friends over time. Today, I'm with Thomas Arnett, who is a senior research fellow in education for the Christensen Institute. His research and his work focuses on disruptive innovations in K-12 education, which I have a ton of questions about, but we'll focus in on a few today. The changing role of teachers in innovative educational models, and he also examines how teacher education and professional development are shifting to support the evolving needs of teachers and school systems. He's been, one of the reasons why I was attracted to him was a little bit of his background as a teacher. In the Kansas City Public Schools through Teach for America, and then also some other experience as he piloted learning programs for summer schools, blended learning programs for summer schools. And then I heard Tom speak in Florida at the Learning Forward Conference, and he was one of the thought leaders who gave a lecture, and there was so much in there that was really interesting to me, especially living in Silicon Valley and San Jose, where we talk about this stuff all the time. And so in one of his articles, most recent articles from this summer, he says, my hope and focus of a paper that he wrote on this topic is to shift the narrative of teachers versus machines toward a more productive conversation. We need to start talking more about the best ways to integrate technology and teaching in order to amplify teachers' impact. So Tom, I really appreciate your time and welcome. You talk a lot about amplify, and in Florida, you use the word, you know, amplify to kind of talk about how technology can make teaching better. We live in an amazing place, you know, in Silicon Valley. You know, artificial intelligence is talked about all the time. My friends are working on some really cool things in the tech world, but are you seeing a similar shift in thinking about the approach of how might technology actually amplify or spur innovation in schools?
Well, I see a lot of people talking about the benefits of technology as one approach to personalized learning for students. And a lot of the conversation revolves around that idea of personalized learning. But I'm hoping to be a voice for helping the field see that teachers are really critical, and we can't have the conversation about personalization and about technology without having a conversation at the same time about teachers. You know, I think it's absolutely foolish to think about replacing teachers with technology, because technology just isn't good at most of the activities that teachers do. You know, technology can give you math problems that are right at your Goldilocks zone of challenging yet doable, but it can't tell you what makes you excited about math. You know, technology can also, you know, tell you if your essay has good structure, if your grammar is correct, but it can't tell you how to find your personal voice and to really grab at the heartstrings of your audience. And so, you know, when we look at research, we see that the number one thing that impacts students' outcomes more than anything else in education is the quality of their teacher. So rather than trying to engineer teachers out of the system, I think what we really should be focusing on is how do we engineer technologies that magnify what teachers are able to do, that help them to be more effective in serving their students in the ways they're already trying to serve their students, and amplify their ability to spend their time on those highest value activities for their students.
So when you were, you know, in Florida, and I wonder about this, and maybe this is not maybe a planned question, but it gets into this, how much of your experience as a teacher and then talking with teachers in the rest of the United States impacts how you think about some of this compared to many of the people that we live around and work around who, you know, think of it through the technology lens?
Yeah. Well, I'll say, I don't know if you want much of my personal background story, but the work I do now was motivated by some of the frustrations I had as a teacher. When I was teaching middle school math, and you know, I'd look at my class and I'd see on one end of the spectrum, I had students who had major challenges in their lives outside of school that led to them missing a lot of school and not having a lot of support. And so those students were just drastically behind grade level. And on the other end of the spectrum, I had students who were bored, who had lots of support at home, who had, you know, I think some natural abilities that made math easy for them. And then I had a whole bunch of students in the middle. And as a teacher, I just always struggled with, I am not reaching all of these students. I am not meeting their needs. In fact, I don't even, as a teacher, have really a good read on what those individual needs are. And so as a teacher, I just have this sense that technology should be able to solve some of these problems for me. It should be able to help me see, help give me a more clear picture of what these individual student learning needs are on a real-time basis, and then help me to better differentiate my instruction to meet their individual needs. So I think that for me, the fundamental question was, how can technology better help with differentiation? Because, you know, I think we all, people in education know differentiation is what our students need, but doing differentiated instruction on a day in, day out basis at a really high level is incredibly challenging.
So this is perfect because, you know, I've been in education now for 20 years as a teacher, as a coach, as a dean, as a principal, counselor. I view myself as a lifetime educator now at this point in time in my career. But as I've watched technology in the last 20 years and really in my job, there are ways where it's made it me more effective and more efficient, and it has allowed me to get to know my students a little bit more effectively. But it seems like in education, we still kind of do things pretty traditionally and just layer, you know, this technology effect on. So actually, when we look at it, we're actually doing more work than when I first started my career 2 decades ago. So, like, what are some of the practical ways that you're seeing, you know, where people are actually disrupting the system or the process or their model? Or what are the practical ways even a single teacher can use technology to kind of disrupt and create some of these, you know, efficiencies that allow for greater effectiveness that you're seeing, you know, in schools or around the country?
Yeah, well, I think the reality is that when you look at how technology is used across schools across the country, some of the examples are incredible and some of them are absolutely terrible. And really the difference, I think in many cases, just comes down to the details of how that technology is getting used, how it's getting implemented, how it's getting rolled out. You know, some positive examples that I find really inspiring are, you know, one would be an article I read that just talked about a teacher using Google Classroom, which is, you know, Google's learning management system they've been developing for a number of years now. And the teacher saying, you know, in a real practical way, Google Classroom saves me from having to go to the copier because it just simplifies the logistics of distributing, grading, collecting assignments. Another example would be my daughter, who's in transitional kindergarten right now. We met with her teacher at parent teacher conference, and the teacher talked about Lexia, which is a Lexia Core 5, which is a early literacy online learning program. And the teacher said how much she really values Lexia showing her where her different students are at with their reading and showing her where they're struggling while they're all getting individualized practice on early literacy skills. You know, one other example, probably the one that gets me most excited, was a teacher I met in Salt Lake City who is at a school that's using technology in really interesting, innovative ways, who basically said, the technology is letting me do what I always wanted to do as a teacher. It's letting me actually teach in the way that I always wanted to teach. At her school, they use technology to let her shift her time away from a daily marathon of delivering whole class instruction and trying to get students, manage students so that they'd stay focused and pay attention. It shifted her role away from doing that and then let her spend more time really helping students one-on-one, tutoring them, meeting with them in small groups, really coaching them on the areas where they needed the most help. And so she found it incredibly beneficial. But again, I think, you know, there's, for every positive example like that, there's also a handful of negative examples. And I think the difference comes down to, is technology something that teachers are pulling into their classrooms because they hear from colleagues, hey, this really helps me solve problems that I've had as a teacher? Or is technology something we do to teachers where we say, you're now going to have Chromebooks. Every student in your class is going to have a Chromebook and you're going to need to have them log in for X amount of time a day. And the teachers find themselves saying, hey, you just added another distraction, added another thing that I have to manage. And I'm not really seeing the benefits in terms of my instruction.
As you think about, you know, and as you work with schools and as you look at this for the Christensen Institute, I find it interesting. And this maybe wasn't part of the plan, but I read a quote recently, or actually this week, from Paul Emmerich, who's, you know, writes a blog and was out of San Jose in this area, and he, you know, made a statement that he said the vision for personalized learning that Silicon Valley preaches does not work. And you talk about blended learning. Like, how do we make sense of like all this stuff, and then what is possible to do exactly what you're talking about to magnify or amplify the teacher effect?
Yeah, it was interesting you mentioned that piece. I know Paul. I met with him a few times back when he was teaching at Alt School, and I saw on Twitter a tweet about his recent blog post, and I haven't had a chance to read it yet, so I'm curious to see what he says. But anyway, your question about how do you make sense of all these personalized learning, blended learning, all these different trends that are happening, is that what you were asking?
Yeah, because you're working, especially, you know, you started talking in Florida when you were doing your presentation, and then even reading some of your articles online. You talk about a blended approach, especially to mm-hmm. that. And then it goes back to this idea of amplify and magnify that teacher effect that is still, you know, it can't be replaced or it shouldn't be replaced, using, you know, kind of some of that terminology. But like, what's the difference in between blended and even personalized, and, you know, how this, like, you know, and even taking Paul's statements as, you know, he's making some, that article is great because he makes some really strong statements in there. And so it leads to some really great, you know, conversation, discussion, and even thinking around this. But how have you found in your research blended learning as that maximizer to the teacher effect?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a bunch of things to dive in on there. One is, when I talk about blended learning, I'm very careful to point out that blended learning is not a silver bullet solution. I think of blended learning as a noun. It's a type of instructional model that supports personalized learning. And I think of personalized learning as the verb, that our focus is on personalizing to students' individual needs. What makes personalized learning really tricky to wrap your head around is that it's vague. It's a vague term that means a lot of different things to many different people. For some people, personalized learning is place-based learning. For some, it's project-based. For some, it's blended. For some, it's competency-based. So there's lots of different ways to personalize, and there's no single definition of what personalized learning means. But if we just focus on the core idea of personalizing or student-centered learning, learning focused on the individual student's needs, we see blended learning as really the technology that makes that kind of learning practically feasible. It's not the core of learning, but it's the technology and the instructional model that makes that kind of learning possible for teachers to do across a variety of learning contexts and on a day-to-day basis. But another comment I want to make with blended learning is that there's good examples out there of blended learning and there's bad examples. And there's, even within the world of blended learning, there's lots of different examples of blended learning. You've got classroom rotation examples, you've got computer lab examples, you've got flipped classroom examples, and you know, you can't study blended learning as a category and say, does it work or does it not work? I think it's kind of like asking, do wings work? You know, if you look at at things that fly, you can, you know, we see a strong correlation that many, if not most things that fly have wings, but just putting wings on any old vehicle doesn't make it fly. You can't just strap wings to your car and say, now, you know, now my car can fly. So the same thing with blended learning is that blended learning can enable some really high quality instruction, but just the fact that someone's doing blended learning doesn't mean that that instruction is high quality. A lot of it depends on, it really gets down to the details of how it's implemented and how that blended learning is laced together with strong classroom culture, strong curriculum, strong teaching practices, and things like that.
It's great. It'll be interesting to kind of, you know, relook at Paul's, you know, kind of comments. And then I think it's interesting to hear you talk about blended learning as the noun and personalized learning as the verb. It's even a good way for me to think through some of this stuff too, as I work, you know, in schools and with schools. It may be the last question as you think about this, and it came up in Florida that, you know, using the Bloomberg chart that you used, but that with artificial intelligence and careers, that teaching's not necessarily going anywhere anytime in the near future. But then, you know, before we jumped on, we talked about the teacher shortage, especially here in the Silicon Valley. How might some of this, you know, with blended learning, the technology, a different thinking and a different approach more creatively in magnifying the teacher effect or amplifying that, you know, in those terms, how might this actually impact or help us begin to maybe not solve the teacher shortage, but at least impact it in a positive way? What are you seeing in this area or even around the country as you look at some of those issues of being able to maximize teachers in their professional capacity, and especially since there is such a lack of teachers throughout the country and especially here in San Jose?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one thing I want to make really clear is I don't think technology is a solution to the teacher shortage. I think that fundamentally the teacher shortage exists because of problems we have in the way we've designed education policy and the way that we fund education and the way that we're able to pay teachers. And so really addressing teacher shortages, I think, is something that we need to wrestle with at the policy level and really consider the ways in which I think our values as a society are not quite matched up with our practices in education and the way that we recruit and retain teachers. But that being said, I think you make a good point that I think technology can help a lot on the margins to help us incrementally better the situation we're in, given the teacher shortages. So, you know, as one example, technology can help us with if a school doesn't have access to a teacher for a certain content area, you know, they may be able to gain access to that teacher by bringing in an online teacher to teach a course, or actually enrolling students in an online course where they may not have a local teacher, but there's a teacher somewhere else in their area or somewhere else in the country who can provide the instruction they're looking for. Related to that is that kind of teaching can also help make teaching a more sustainable career for people. And there's a lot of people that have teacher's licenses that aren't actually in the profession because teaching is a very demanding job. And for some people, given their stages of life or their life circumstances, teaching full-time just doesn't work for them, but they don't have many other options traditionally. And so, you know, I talked to one school leader here in the Bay Area who noted that she found when she offered teachers the opportunity to just teach part-time, and to teach online with flexible hours, that all of a sudden it solved her challenges related to the teacher shortages, because there were plenty of people who were eager to teach if it didn't have to be full time and fixed to a school's schedule. So I think online learning and giving teachers the opportunity to teach online, teach remotely, can help make the profession more flexible to teachers' lives and their circumstances. Now, I will note that's not for every teacher, but I think it is one solution for certain situations and certain teachers. You know, another thing that technology can do is when you just don't have access to a teacher, it can be a way to help students continue to make progress in their education. And again, this is a stopgap solution, not the ultimate solution for our challenges. But a recent report I wrote talked about how in Delhi, India, there's some parts of that area where the communities are extremely impoverished and they just don't have college-educated people who have the capacity to teach basic mathematics. And so even if funding wasn't an issue, they just don't have the human capital in their communities to be able to teach even basic elementary level math. So what they've done is set up these centers where students can access an online learning platform to learn basic math. And then they hire adults from the community who don't know math, but who care a lot about students and who work well with students to coach them and to help them. So,
We see some of that changing with one of the organizations that we partner with that has gone to completely online tutoring and just meeting the needs of people where and when rather than always the physical side of things. And we've seen great benefits from that personally. Let me ask you one last thing. You know, I really appreciate your time. This is great stuff. And you bring up policy stuff. I mean, if you're ever up for another conversation with a few questions, I love talking policy. Would love to hear your thoughts on some of that and your other work on some of that. But as you sit here, January 2018, we're kind of at the middle of the month. Any predictions for this year in regards to technology, education, policy, or anything that you see that, you know, gets you excited for this year ahead?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this year we're probably going to see a lot of the real work in making progress in education technology really get underway. You know, oftentimes the technology, there's a hype cycle where something's new and it gets a lot of attention. And then after taking that attention, people get disappointed and let down. And often that the point when the mainstream media turns away and looks for something else new to talk about. But at that point, when the spotlight turns in a new direction is often when I think the real innovators make the most progress. And so I think we're kind of at that point right now with many of these technologies is they've been around for a little while. They've had some scrutiny, but now there's lots of thoughtful people who are in the trenches figuring out how to make it work. So it may not be a very newsworthy year, but I think 2 or 3 years from now, I think we'll look back and see that 2018 was really a year when a lot of the real challenges in education started to get addressed in earnest.